The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 557, recorded on December, Friday the 13th, 2019.
Seventh edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 390th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yeah, so this podcast is delayed, so right now we had the Video Game Awards going on with a lot of announcements. One of them was recent, and it was like a pleasant surprise, and that is A Wolf Among Us 2 is going to get made.
That's very good. I'm glad to hear that the original creative team is also working on it.
Yeah, so. Ad Hoc Software, who are made of from former members. And it's being backed by Warner Brothers, so this is not going to be a chance in which someone, you know, it's not going to get made. And I believe, you know, they actually had A Wolf Among Us 2 in at least preliminary, so they're not working from scratch.
Yeah.
That's good.
I mean, they showed a trailer. I think they showed a trailer last year, didn't they? Yep. So.
Yeah, and also, yeah, so we finally found out what the next Xbox is going to be called. The Xbox Series X. which makes sense, actually, because if every single Xbox is going to be compatible with each other, so basically it's just going to be like a Galaxy, so it's sort of like saying it's a Samsung Galaxy, whatever, S10, S11, S12. So I'm willing to bet you it's going to be Xbox Series X2, Xbox Series X3, Xbox Series X4, or maybe Xbox Series 2X, or stuff like that.
They are really not creative with these names.
Yeah, it's really creative for Sony to call their next console the PlayStation 5.
I mean, at least they're...
Well, at least it's consistent. Yeah. You know, you don't have any
well,
of these confusing...
Well, this is consistent, too. I mean, it's...
It doesn't need to be creative, but it should... I don't know. You know, you got, like, Xbox... What was the... Then 360, then Xbox One, then... It's just... Doesn't make any sense what order they're in.
Let's talk about the games. Senua's Saga Hellblade 2 has been announced, and that's by Ninja Theory. So Microsoft's saying, yeah, just make us another Ninja Theory. We like your Overwatch with Melee. You know, we think it's perfect for Xbox Game Pass. That's what that game is strictly for, Game Pass. You know, it's basically – I can't call it game as service because the entire service is Game Pass, which, by the way, is kind of nice in that with Xbox Game Pass, you don't have to worry about the games as service shit because the Game Pass itself is the service. You know, it's like Sea of Thieves. They just pump out new content. So they're doing, that's probably what they're going to do with... Oh, damn, I forgot the name of it. What was it named, called again? Ninja Theory's Hero Shooter? Or Hero Melee-er?
I don't know.
I forgot. Well, anyway, I haven't played Senua's Saga, by the way. I haven't played the first one. I'm pretty sure you did.
Yeah, I did. It's very atmospheric. The combat is not very good. I don't think so anyways, but it's also not the main point of the thing. The main point of the thing is like a psychosis. It's a game that's like best – it's a game that's best played with headphones because then you're kind of like – it gives you the experience of being inside Senua's head and hearing these voices, these accusatory voices like goading her on.
I remember for Game Watcher I was covering all the developer videos and how much they went into the characters' facial expressions. So I know they make L.A. Noire look like a cel-shaded cartoon in comparison.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Bleeding Edge is their multiplayer game. So that's going to be their contribution to Games Pass. So yeah, I mean, what's interesting is that they're calling it. It's Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice was the first game. Now it's Senua's Saga, Hellblade 2, which sort of gives you an idea of what to expect. It's like, just saying it's a saga means that it's going to be a new ongoing open-ended story.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not entirely sure. Like, the first one, it was very, it felt like it was done when it was done. So I'm interested to see how they expand on that, and I hope they don't, like, for lack of better terms, mess up the good thing that they made in, with the narrative in the first game.
Yeah. So, another exciting thing is a new Baldur's Gate game is coming out. It's just Dark Alliance. It's based on Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. For those who don't know, Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance was basically Diablo with AD&D. So Dark Alliance is coming out. They're not calling it Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. It's just Dark Alliance, but it is Dungeons & Dragons, which tells me it's not going to be focused on Baldur's Gate. It's probably going to be all over. You know, we don't even know if it's going to be Forgotten Realms.
It's Forgotten Realms.
Oh, it is? Oh, okay.
Yes.
But it's not going to be confined to Baldur's Gate.
No. It'll do like an adventure, top-down, hack-and-slash little thing. Because I remember playing the first one, and it was just, I don't know, it felt like a Diablo clone to me.
It is a Diablo clone. It's unapologetically a Diablo. But you know what? That's what makes it so awesome. Mm-hmm. If you're gonna do it, just rip it off completely and just put a D&D license on it. I don't care. I mean, I'm looking forward to some Dark Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of a Diablo style game, you also have Godfall, which is coming out for the PS5. That's going to be a looter slasher. That's yet another action adventure. Have you seen that one?
Yes, I did. I watched
also the
entire.
It's coming out on PC as well. Just by the way.
So. I watched the whole Game Awards, and I need to see more of both games. They didn't really sell me.
Yeah, same here.
They kind of just look like the same sort of generic mm-hmm. grunty yelly people beating up fantasy either zombies or orcs. Interchangeable.
Like a World of Warcraft what's called trailer, you know, cutscene trailer, or Diablo cutscene trailer. You know, nothing that's indicative of actual gameplay, just people just fighting.
I will say I hope that that Dungeons & Dragons has as much fantasy metal in the game as it did in that trailer.
Yeah. So we also have the Final Fantasy VII Remake. It's coming to PS5 in March, and they've already leaked that it's going to come to Xbox a year later, so it has the year exclusivity. And I think that's going to be the last we're ever going to see of that kind of stuff. Either it's going to be exclusive or not. It's not going to be, oh, we're going to hold it off for another. Because I think a lot of consumers are starting to view exclusivity as anti-consumer.
To a certain degree, I would say so. Yeah, I mean, like, that's like what people are – that's what people get their underwear in a bunch over the Epic Game Store, right?
Yeah.
I have to open another storefront? God damn it.
Well, it isn't that. It's sort of like well, we're going to be talking about that news later. Some shocking news that was announced earlier, and some not so shocking news, but happy news, and we'll be discussing that later. Ori Will of the Wisps is coming to Xbox One. Of course, you can put an asterisk on that, because if they brought the first Ori to Switch, you can bet your bottom dollar this Ori is going to be on Switch at some point in the future, too.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah. I haven't played the first Ori, so, I mean, I've seen screenshots. It looks pretty. I don't know about the gameplay. I've never played it.
It is your very typical Metroidvania fare where you have access to like so much of the map until you find certain abilities that allow you to explore further. Lots of backtracking, lots of like slowly expanding upon your character until they have all the abilities they need. What I would say that Ori has over other games like that is that it has some of the most beautiful visuals and soundtrack out of any game I've ever seen.
I also would like to say that Ori feels very organic in its theme, whereas, you know, like Metroid is, she has all these tools and gadgets and guns. Ori is just this kind of little energy creature. Yeah, and
everything is glowy in the game.
Yeah, and the story is very, I think, visual. I don't remember. There was like a little bit of text, but a lot of it is just kind of visual, seeing what's happening.
There's there's sort of a Navi-type creature that follows you around and sort of does some exposition, but it's not a lot. There's a lot – Scott's right. There is a lot more like visual storytelling as opposed to hand-holding and like, this is what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And let's talk about Gears Tactics. And we finally got a look at it, and it pleased a lot of people because it's XCOM, but with a Gears license, which makes me giggle a bit because Gears introduced well, it didn't introduce, but, you know, it made very popular the entire of cover-based mechanics, and XCOM is all about cover-based mechanics. So, yeah, what do you think of Gears Xbox XCOM Tactics?
I forgot it existed up until that trailer launched.
I will say this, you know, a lot of people are jumping into that XCOM thing ever since Firaxis released, you know, the first XCOM. You know, you have Hard West, you have Phoenix Point, you know. So it looks like the tactical strategy game is making a comeback in a big way.
Have you had a chance to play Phoenix Point yet?
Nope. I'm waiting until it actually appears on Game Pass. Although, I did download Age of Wonders Planetfall, so that'll be taking up my time for a while.
So basically the headline the top line I'm hearing on Phoenix Point is that it brought back a lot of that sort of like statistics and numbers running type gameplay to XCOM.
Look who it was developed by though. So
sure, I mean for some people that'll be like really fun, but it is like very numbers heavy, very like stats driven, very like look at all these things that you need to look after. And
there is an audience for that. I mean, I like XCOM because it's basically, you know, go and shoot, and you know you can see how much damage you're probably going to do by the flashing yellow bars. But sometimes, you know, you want to have something in which you can micromanage.
You know what they brought back that I did see from one of my colleagues playing the game for review. Uh-huh. Your gun barrel can be literally inside the flesh of an enemy at a, and there's a chance you can miss. There's a chance you can miss.
See, that's what I don't want from XCOM. 95% shot. Oh, look, you missed it. You missed a berserker. You missed a berserker that's right in front of you somehow.
I just can't understand how it's that hard to make, like, maybe a status effect where if you're literally within no moving distance from an enemy, just call it an automatic hit unless, like, your character has something like psyche shaken or something that would cause them to panic.
I mean, here's the thing. You know, point blank doesn't have to be right next to them. You can be a couple of feet away and still be point blank. Point blank just means there's no way you can miss. You know, there has to be a period in which you're point blank away.
Like, if your character is stable and unwounded, there's no reason they should miss a shotgun blast standing right next to a person.
Yeah. So, you want to talk about Ghost of Tsushima?
Ghost of Tsushima. No, it's not Ghost of Sushi.
Ghost of Tsushima. Ghost of Tsushima. It's coming to the PlayStation.
Yes. It looked gorgeous. Oh, my God.
Well, it, PS5, it better be.
It looked like... It looked like a painting in motion. It looked like I've been talking a lot with my colleagues about Sekiro this last week, and it makes me think of all the reasons I love Sekiro. Yeah. I haven't played a Sucker Punch game in a long, long time. I think the last one and like the only one I played was the spinoff from Infamous 2. Where you play as the girl. And I didn't remember being all that like blown away by it. But I also think I missed the bus on the Infamous games.
Finally, let's talk about Ruined King, which is single player League of Legends. Which is good because it takes away the worst part of that game.
Not only Ruined King, they announced two League of Legends single-player games coming out of the Riot Forge program, which Riot Forge, for those who don't know, is... Riot is basically taking their universe and outsourcing it to like established third-party developers to play around with and make their own ideas. So Ruined King is it takes place in the sort of Bilgewater, which is sort of the piratey themed part of League of Legends universe. They also announced Convergence, which looks like it's going to focus on Zaun, which is the sort of technologically – it's a city that values science over everything and has no laws.
Could be Zakharov from Alpha Centauri.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because like League of Legends has this – for those who don't know, League of Legends has a super vast sort of lore built up from all the like over 150 characters.
Yeah, but with the fan base, you really don't care at some point.
Well, it's like, a lot of people do care. It's just that League of Legends and Riot Games isn't. Well, who cares about that? The toxic side. I'm talking about like the people that do care
that's
about
just
this.
It. Ruined King won't have the toxic side.
And that's what I'm saying, is that you've had this lore just sitting in the rafters, and Riot Games themselves was never able to focus on it, or outside of like little tidbits like comics. So it's really cool for them to put that vast universe in the hands of like third-party studios that can really play around and flesh out those things.
So
I'm vastly more excited for the stuff that comes out of Riot Forge than I am for the stuff that comes out of like League of Legends, because Ruined King is going to be made by Airship Syndicate, who just put out Darksiders Genesis, which was a freaking great game. And so if that's the caliber of developers that they're getting for this, I'm excited to see what they do.
So anyways, we're going to go straight to game news, because the game news that was announced earlier this week just was mind-blowing, some of it. And here's the mind-blowiest. MLB The Show going multi-platform, quote, as early as 2021. And this comes to us from Heavy.com. The long-running MLB video game series, MLB The Show, sounds like it could be coming to Xbox and Nintendo consoles in the near future, making this major news for baseball fans. And not just sounding like, I mean, if you have the official Xbox and Switch Twitter handles, among other parts of the thing, it's sort of like, yeah, why are they cheering unless they know it's coming to them, you know? In a press release announcing a multi-year extension with MLB and Sony, it was announced the game would be going multi-platform as soon as 2021, which I would guess to mean March of 2021. In addition, the historic expansion of the long-standing partnerships will bring MLB The Show for the first time ever to additional console platforms beyond PlayStation platforms as early as 2021, reads the press release. MLB The Show is being developed in-house by Sony at San Diego Studio, so it's interesting to see them bringing games to other platforms. Microsoft has been open to allowing its games on other platforms. You can thank Nintendo for that. And it looks like Sony is starting to come around to the idea with recent news. And I have to say something, they probably aren't, and I'll explain that in a moment. Nintendo and Microsoft tweeted their approval, hinting the game would be indeed landing on the Xbox and Switch. So I don't think this is a Sony decision. I think this is an MLB baseball situation. Because here's the thing. So the original agreement between MLB and making games is that they can only be first-party games, with the exception of MLB's game. So Sony was making their baseball game, but Microsoft and Nintendo were not. And a lot of people who own an Xbox are kind of frustrated at that, because Microsoft owns the High Heat license, and they did not use it. And I think they're just looking at the money and thinking it's not going to make us any money. You know, and Sony's been making this game, and I don't know if it's been making them money. I mean, it sells. But here's the thing. MLB has been producing a game, too. It's RBI Baseball. And as everybody knows, RBI Baseball is god-awful. It has been since 2014. And here's the thing that probably MLB did not expect. They probably didn't expect Microsoft and Nintendo to sit on their hands and not make a baseball game. They probably told Sony, listen, you can make a baseball game, and we'll even give you a discount, but you have to make it for all the platforms, because we're sick of making RBI Baseball and it getting shit on. We make a crappy baseball game, so you're going to make a baseball game for all the platforms, or else... Oh, you hear that? Oh, is that EA scratching at the door wanting to make a baseball game? Oh, is that Konami? Oh, is that 2K? Because here's the thing. Konami, by the way, made the best baseball game that you never played. They made the Japanese baseball game. And it was really good. So, yeah, MLB probably strong-armed Sony into doing this. Telling you, if you don't, you know what? EA, 2K, and Konami are more than happy to make their baseball games.
I like to imagine that it's also the fact that basically MLB gave them like a ton of money to say, can you please, can we break the exclusivity? We'll pay for it.
Sony paid for it. But here's the thing. Sony had this option. Either you do what MLB asks and buy the license from them. And it's MLB and MLBPA, because both the teams and the players are different unions. But they also heard MLB said, well, you know, I bet Electronic Arts would love to make a baseball game. And people have really good memories of EA's baseball game, Triple Play. I hated it. And you can't assume that baseball, the last time they made a game was 2005. You can't assume that it's going to be the same thing because you know they're going to games of service the shit out of it like they did with Madden and 2K, what they did with MLB NBA 2K. But still, you know, Sony don't want that competition. And here's the bonus thing, though. Sony's going to make a lot more money because they're making it for three consoles now. I haven't heard PC in the mix. I'd be surprised if there wasn't a PC version, but it's possible.
Hmm. No, I don't know.
But yeah, I mean, it's going to be really funky. I don't know if Sony's going to put their logo on it, by the way. Because Microsoft does not put their logo on Minecraft. They use Mojang instead. So yeah. Maybe it'll say, well, San Diego Studio or something like that. Who knows? I don't care if they put the Sony logo on it. I don't really care. I just hope it's better than MLB The Show 19, because what I heard, 19 took out some favorite mechanics when it comes to franchise play. So I'm hoping they go back a bit. I'm also hoping they may use that time and money to make it even bigger. We'll see. Now, here's the real question. Will there be cross-platform play?
Likely. I would say more likely than not.
Because that's the number one wish of every Sony PlayStation fan, is that they keep on asking for online leagues, you know, online franchise leagues. So who knows? Maybe this will be their way to do it and get a whole bunch of other people to justify having those servers.
It's kind of amazing that in a world where, like, NBA 2K20 was one of the highest selling games of November and has a pretty popular league, that MLB The Show hasn't been able to pull off something of the same.
Well, that's the other thing. That's why Microsoft and Switch, Nintendo never made a baseball game, because they ran the numbers that it's not profitable. You know, because we're only going to do it for one console. EA would do it, 2K would do it, Konami would do it, because they're all doing it for multiple platforms. Sony, I think, has been doing it just because they can say, hey, look, we have the only baseball game. And it's sort of like a value add that doesn't make money on its own, but it helps you sell systems. Not that many systems. I don't think I'm the only person I know, say, who would consider buying a PlayStation just to play The Show. But it's still not enough for me to buy a PlayStation. No, I don't have to have that worry anymore. But I have to warn you, Sony, you know, I am very critical on my baseball games. I will pick them apart, because I've played baseball. I've been in this stuff. I played it semi-pro. I've played it in college. So every little – I'm going to nitpick the hell out of your game and then send it to you. Send you the list of all my nitpicks. I don't care if it's the first time I'm playing a real baseball game that isn't out-of-the-park baseball, which is a baseball sim, which I love. But it's not quite the same thing as, you know, swinging a bat and hitting the ball, you know. So be careful, Sony. You have one of the nitpickiest MLB fans ever. if the player throws to the wrong base, if they don't tag on a fly like they should, I will be up on your grill. So let's talk about even happier news. Scott, go ahead.
Minecraft Bedrock version on PS4. This is from Eurogamer. At last, Minecraft launched its cross-platform version on PlayStation 4 today.
By the way, today was back on Tuesday, so it's been a while since it's been around.
Right. The game's Bedrock build is currently available and offers cross-play between Xbox One, Windows 10, Nintendo Switch, iPhone, Android, and Gear VR. Existing owners of Minecraft PlayStation 4 Edition will begin updating to the Bedrock version then, Microsoft said today in a press release, or said Tuesday. Just as when this happened on Xbox One, the Bedrock version will arrive as its own separate game client. You'll still be able to play in the old PlayStation 4 Edition if you own it already, but it will no longer be available to purchase. Yeah, that's the legacy version. It won't be updated anymore.
I mean, some people get attached to the old version and they don't really want to upgrade. It's not because
I know.
Like the
people
Bedrock
love playing.
They like it better.
people love playing like the alpha Minecraft because they feel like that was the best Minecraft, but there's so much new stuff now. Disc-based versions of Minecraft PS4 Edition will unlock a download from Minecraft's Bedrock Edition. You'll need a Xbox login to play Minecraft's Bedrock Edition on PS4. Microsoft confirmed to your gamer, but of course you do not need to be an Xbox Live Gold subscriber.
You don't even need the Xbox client. You just need an Xbox account because what it's doing is giving you a single account for all the versions that you might play.
A free Microsoft or Xbox Live account allows all Minecraft players to track progress and purchases across platforms, now including PS4. Spokesperson told Eurogamer, the paid Xbox Live Gold service is not required to play Minecraft.
Unlike what it was with Fortnite for a bit, in which you had, if you had two copies of Fortnite, one's on the PS4, guess what? All your purchases on one wasn't on the other. So this is actually saying, no. Any purchase you make on any of the platforms, they're cross-platform. So if you bought the content on the Xbox One, it's still available for you on the PS4.
Oh, and you won't unlock Xbox achievements. The spokesperson confirmed instead PlayStation owners will unlock trophies. So why now? Here's what Microsoft said when we asked. This has been a big year for Minecraft. We're making major changes to the game and taking steps in new directions. But our original vision for connecting players across devices and having best experience regardless of platform will always stay true. We'll be taking to our partners at Sony about this for a while and think now is the right time from both a studio and community perspective to bring PS4 players along on the Bedrock journey. The arrival of Bedrock on PS4 marks the end of a long wait for PlayStation fans. Up until now, Sony's console has been the last to use Minecraft's specially developed console version, ported by Scottish outfit 4J Studios, as opposed to Bedrock Client, which has become the default Minecraft version on Switch and Xbox One. Recent additions include a character creator, foxes and bees. Next big update is for the Nether.
Yeah, so this is what Scott can do now. He can have three people in his place. One is on a cell phone, another is on the Switch, another is on the PlayStation 4, and they'll all be playing with each other in the same room.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I have Java, though, so...
Then you're shit out of luck.
Not really. I have other Java players to play with, so it's all good.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's nice. I know a lot of people who actually have, say, a Switch and a PlayStation 4 and an Xbox One, who they're just going to have little LAN parties now.
Yeah, I have a Switch and PlayStation, so if I had Minecraft on those consoles, it would be great. Yeah, actually, we could play with my friends who have an Xbox, so that would work really well.
Do you know, this comes on top of some interesting numbers, too. YouTube Rewind, which I wouldn't say is useful for too much, but it did put out some very, very interesting stats as to who was watching what when it came to gaming. Minecraft was by far the most watched game of 2019, and it was like 100 million views. Oh, no, 100 billion views.
Tens of millions.
There's so many Minecraft YouTubers, it's... I'm surprised it took this long for YouTube to even.
I'm sorry. I was wrong. Tens of billions of views.
To acknowledge. I know a lot of them are PewDiePie, but there's others besides him.
And look, 100.2 billion views. Not all of them are PewDiePie.
Yeah.
By the way, a little side note. PewDiePie is complaining that Apple will not publish his game. Because he says that his poo game is too disgusting. And my response is, well, was it your poo game or you that they found disgusting?
Both.
So I actually had to pull this up because even yours was way off, Jonah. Minecraft was viewed over 100 billion times throughout 2019. You said tens of billions. This was 100 billion.
I know, I said tens of billions, and I said 100.2 billion views.
Yeah.
Nearly double the next guy, which was Fortnite. Well, not nearly double, but it was
Fortnite.
Fortnite 9 billion.
Yeah.
And Grand Theft Auto was like 40 billion. What surprised me is Roblox. People play a lot of Roblox.
Uh-huh. But like
30 billion.
But it's absolutely phenomenal. Just like everybody is playing Minecraft. Nearly 10 years after it's come out, everybody is still playing Minecraft.
One of Minecraft's strongest aspects is the fact that it's not just one type of gameplay. You know, it's not just a survival game. You can do builds.
Yeah, I'm gonna show. Oh, here's the video of someone turning Minecraft into Space Invaders.
Yeah, you know, I saw someone make a Mega Man level in Minecraft. You have computers. There's just an endless amount of things you can do with Minecraft. You know, and it's just, imagination is the only limit. You know.
You know, here's the thing. I don't play Minecraft, but I've played enough of these kind of games when I was younger to understand what the big hullabaloo is. You know, and it's the sort of thing, and if you get into and you start building stuff, it's sort of like you don't want to be left out. And you know, you don't want to lose everything you created, you know.
Right. You get very attached to your builds. I can understand that. Yeah. And then when a new update comes to Minecraft, you're like, can my world continue through this next update, or does it have to be abandoned? Sometimes it has to be abandoned. My current server, we've had it going for, I think, since version 1.8 or something. I think that was the last biome update, and that was several years ago. And now this new Nether update is coming, where they're going to put in several biomes into the Nether and just totally revamp the Nether. So it's going to be like a whole new place now.
I have a question, Scott. Is there a way to, like, if you don't want to upgrade to a thing that's going to destroy all your work, can you like set your server to like a legacy patch where it won't?
I was saying earlier, there are alpha versions of the Minecraft game that you could just stay and play in if you want to. You don't ever have to update if you don't want to.
That's cool. Because that would be super frustrating if I had to start all over again every time a patch came out. But it's so cool. Like, and not only that, but it's so cool to see, like, Microsoft knows what they have. They're leaning into it hard with stuff like Minecraft Dungeons and Minecraft Earth.
Oh yeah.
Well, here's the thing: Minecraft is a platform unto itself, which is why Microsoft unabashedly says, no, you guys on the Switch are not going to lose it. You guys on the PlayStation are not going to lose it. You know, this is a platform unto itself.
It is. I agree. You can, like I said, make all sorts of mini games for it. There's been thousands of things like Race for the Wool, Complete the Monument, Spleef, and UHC, which is the original Battle Royale. You know, there's just so many things you can do with it.
I hope if advanced civilizations ever discover Earth, they see Minecraft first, because then they'll know that we're cool as shit. If they see the other stuff, we might be in trouble.
Right.
So let's go for the next item, and I know this makes TJ very happy.
Absolutely. Resident Evil 3 Remake announced out in April. From Kotaku, Nemesis returns to terrorize Resident Evil fans all over again. During this morning's PlayStation State of Play, which was Tuesday, I think.
No, it was on Monday, wasn't it? Oh, whatever. It was on their State of Play presentation. Whatever.
Right. Capcom confirmed the rumored Resident Evil 3 Remake is coming to PlayStation 4 on April 20th. Bundled together with the 4 versus 1 Resident Evil Resistance multiplayer game.
The remake was sort of burying the lead with Resident Evil Resistance. A lot of people were more interested in that than they were with Resident Evil 3.
Wrong. Completely wrong.
No. That's you. That's not everybody.
Completely wrong. But anyways, the remake was introduced during the presentation as the unannounced single-player campaign for Project Resistance, the online multiplayer game announced by Capcom back in September. As it turns out, Project Resistance, now known as Resident Evil Resistance, is a multiplayer mode for a game fans actually wanted.
By the way, you know, here's the thing. I think that was the game, Project Resistance, that the Resident Evil 2 engine was based around. What happens was that they were going to make a game, and they sort of like, no, you know what? Let's just base the Resident Evil 2 game around it, which is why it doesn't feel like a Resident Evil game in that the structure, you know, the way it's built. I mean, you can tell when you play Resident Evil 2 Remastered, the old one, the one with just upgraded, you know, upgraded textures, there's a certain way that the game moves and feels. Resident Evil 2 Remastered was based on a completely different engine that just imported a lot of assets from Resident Evil 2, which is why it has a slightly different feel to it.
Yeah, they basically built the Resident Evil engine from the ground up for Resident Evil 2 Remake.
But I mean, actually for a different game, and they said, wait a minute, you know what? This isn't going to work, so let's just do it for Resident Evil 2.
Right. And what ended up happening, I thought it was like a pipe dream when I heard that like Resident Evil 3 could be out in 2020 early.
Why not? Here's the thing.
What it turns out is that they were working on both games simultaneously.
Well, not only that, but they're also working on the same engine too.
I still thought that it would take time because Resident Evil 3 uses so many different locations from Resident Evil 2. You have literally a hospital, a forest, you have a clock tower, and you just have to build these places from the ground up. Like, you could reuse the police station because it also existed in Resident Evil 3, but there is just so much expanded environment to go through.
I know a lot of people actually – 3 is their favorite of the series, even over 4. You were one of them?
I absolutely love Resident Evil 3.
But you like it more than 4, is what I'm saying.
I would say that 2 is probably my favorite out of the main lines, but like Resident Evil 3 is still very, very, very good.
Well, the reason why a lot of people love Resident Evil 3 the much is basically one word, and that's Nemesis. They love that character.
Nemesis is like a
Mr. X, but improved.
Yeah, he's a persevering threat. He can go through doors. He has a rocket launcher. He has a little spindly tentacle hentais in his hand.
He was badly done in the movie, yeah.
He was tremendously horribly done in the movie, but what wasn't?
Well, okay, now stop. I actually like the first Resident Evil and some of the others, if only because, one, Mila Jovovich, and another, it was at least Paul Anderson used a certain kind of style to it. It may have been stupid at some points, but at least it was always interesting to look at.
Man, I could go into full detail on how stupid that movie was.
Yeah, but it was fun. I mean, that's the thing. Whatever you do, you can be bad, just don't be boring.
That laser hallway was just...
Oh, that was fun.
it was the biggest crack of bullshit.
Cube, by the way. That was a total rip-off of Cube.
It was a crack of bullshit. Cube did it better. I will say that. Cube did it better.
Cube did a lot of things better. Here's the thing. Everybody out there, look up the film 1996's Cube by Vincent – I think his name is Niketty.
Is that the movie where like a bunch of strangers get trapped in this cube maze?
They're all named
I love
prisons.
That movie.
Yeah.
Yes, and the entire cube is like a trap that's based on a mathematical puzzle.
Yeah.
Right, yes, I remember that.
But you have to be careful because there are death traps all over the place, and the movie starts off with a kick, I'll say that. It starts with a death trap, and it is so well done. It is so well done. It sets up the movie so perfectly that you're always on edge because you don't know when someone's going to have something horrible done to them.
Yeah.
Cube 2 was interesting because it also dealt with time. It was a hypercube. It was a tesseract.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things I remember most about that are two characters having sex in a zero-G room, and they age rapidly, and they don't give a shit. So what happens is you end up going fast in time as well as floating in space, and they end up two desiccated corpses. But the funny thing is that since this is a hypercube, other people, they meet themselves. It's all screwed up because you're dealing with six dimensions, instead of just five. I mean, you're dealing with five dimensions instead of just four. It is a really trippy movie. And then that's followed by Cube Zero, which is sort of like an origin story. Oh, and they're all sort of related, but not really, like the Mad Max movies. And Cube Zero goes from the observer's point of view, but then there's a twist, which I won't give away.
Yeah.
I'll just say this. The first Cube is excellent, and the other two are okay, and you're not going to think you were stupid for watching them. But if you're going to watch them in order because then you'll get the most pleasure out of it. But just the first movie is just – oh, and it has – what's her face from Star Trek? She later became a star – she was the one who replaced Jesse at Dax – Ezri. Yeah, Ezri Dax is in it.
Yeah. I do want to get back to this Resident Evil thing because I do want to point out something that's incredibly genius to me. I in a lot of – I and a lot of people had our doubts about Resident Evil Resistance and what it was going to do and where its place in the series was, like where it was going to be in the lead up to Resident Evil 3, because Resident Evil 3 Remake was a horribly kept secret. We all knew it was coming. We all knew it was coming. We just didn't know when. And so there was this question, like, are they spending time equally between Resident Evil 3 and Resistance, or are they going to sort of turn one into a slipshod job while the other succeeds?
Projects, really.
Ultimately, I ended up wondering if it was going to be like a free-to-play experience going into Resident Evil 3, which I wasn't far off. And I think that's a genius – I think that's a genius thing to do, because I don't think that Resident Evil Resistance could survive on its own as a standalone game that you also had to buy.
It could survive as like a $10 or $20 game.
I think if it was going to exist as a standalone, it had to be free to play. But putting it with Resident Evil 3,
you have to monetize it, and I don't think that's what they want.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is that putting it with Resident Evil Resistance, that's perfect. Or Resident Evil 3 Remake, that's perfect, because then you don't have to buy the game. It's there, and it's interesting enough that people will try it out once they're done with Resident Evil 3 Remake.
Actually, you know, it would probably be if Microsoft gets it as well, you can bet your bottom dollar. You know, I bet they would do. I bet you there would be a Game Pass game, Resident Evil Resistance, not Resident Evil 3 Remastered.
I don't know, because I don't think it's going to be on its own. I think it's going to be
on Microsoft, I could easily see it be on its own as a Game Pass game, because Game Pass is for demoing new games, playing older games, and playing multiplayer games. That's why they have Sea of Thieves on Game Pass, you know?
They just announced their first named character for Resident Evil Resistance the other day, and his name is Martin Sandwich.
Here's the elephant in the room, though, TJ. I have to wonder what's going on with a possible Resident Evil 8.
I don't think it's coming until I don't think we're going to hear anything about Resident Evil 8 until 2021.
Here's the thing, you know, from a lot of people, Resident Evil 7 Biohazard was a redeeming game. You know, because after 5 and 6, you know, it knocked people's socks off. Well, of course, it was heavily influenced by PT, but still.
PT is
the demo that changed horror games, period. End of story.
I'm almost certain that people do want to eventually see Resident Evil 8, but while Resident Evil 3 Remake is on the horizon, I don't think they'll care that much.
Actually, you know, I think I heard somewhere. I don't remember. I don't know if – maybe I just made this up in my head, but I could have sworn I saw something about Resident – might be Resident Evil 7 Part 2 or something like that.
I think that when it comes to 2021, once the dust is settled on Resident Evil 3, they could either go towards Resident Evil 8 or they could go for the remake of Resident Evil 4 and people would be happy.
Yeah, I know, but you know, there are some people who just want to see the story move forward. I mean, there's something to be said about remasters, but here's the thing. Everybody's been playing – Resident Evil 4 is the game that everybody's played to death. You know,
yeah.
You played that to death on every single console imaginable. People might want something new. Although whether it will involve rednecks or not, we don't know.
Please, Spanish no rednecks. Rednecks. Spanish rednecks.
Well, can your neck be? Anyway, yeah. We're going to move on to the next item. 2K launches a new studio focused on the next BioShock. This comes from The Verge. BioShock is coming back. Today, publisher 2K announced – well, today is Tuesday. 2K announced the formation of a new studio called Cloud Chamber, which is already working on, quote-unquote, the next iteration of BioShock. It'll be the first new entry in the series since BioShock Infinite in 2013, though it sounds like it'll be a while before we see the new game. 2K says the title will, quote-unquote, be in development for the next several years, making it a prime candidate for the next generation consoles like the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X. Xbox One Series X? Or is it just Xbox Series X? The Xbox Series X, yeah. Anyways, Cloud Chamber will consist of two teams, one in San Francisco, the other one in Montreal, and is being led by industry veteran Kelly Gilmore. There's basically a lot of talk about how they're going to make it great and, you know, the diversity and all that stuff, blah, 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 blah. You know the boilerplate whenever someone talks about making a new game. Back in 2014, Irrational Games, the studio responsible for the BioShock franchise, abruptly closed down while co-founder Ken Levine relaunched the studio in a smaller form under the name Ghost Story. The new studio has yet to release or announce a title, which is sort of depressing. Or maybe he just doesn't want to.
I figured he's working on that Logan's Run remake.
Yeah, the ultimate okay gamer game. Here's the thing. I did not like BioShock Infinite. My favorite game in the series is BioShock 2. And the reason why everybody hated BioShock 2 back in the day was because of Minerva, the multiplayer aspect. They acted like it was a great sin. Oh, no, they put multiplayer in BioShock. Unsubscribe. But BioShock 2 had far better gameplay than either BioShock 1 or Infinite, and a better story.
At the time,
I know people think that's heresy. What? You don't like, the twist about, Would You Kindly? No, I liked BioShock 2's story a lot better, and it had two stories going on at once. You had your story, and you also had that other guy who became a big daddy as well, and his story was really, really touching.
I would mostly agree with
really
you.
Felt for that character.
I would mostly agree with you, but I do like a couple things in particular about BioShock Infinite. The relationship between Songbird and the girl is one of my I think a really interesting story throughout the game.
Kind of obvious as a parallel for an abusive relationship, but that relationship didn't really work for me either. I mean, I did like. The hell is that noise sort of thing when you heard the songbird screech. That meant, oh shit, I better get away.
Yeah. I just think it was a – not only do I think it was an interesting mechanic and an interesting persevering threat to have throughout the game. I don't know. It was something that I enjoyed.
But here's the thing. I could play through BioShock 1 and BioShock 2. I cannot play through BioShock Infinite. And it's not because it's hard. It's kind of easy. But it's fucking dull. And the last level is just such an awful design. Seriously? Tower defense? And not even challenging tower defense. It's a timed thing in which you just have to stay alive.
Yeah. I've never been a fan of those either. I'm not a fan of the final boss battle in the first game either. It just feels humdrum.
It was easy for me because I would just lay a lot of
What I'm saying. It's just humdrum. After everything you've been through in the first game, the final thing is just like, eh.
You know, I didn't know what I was going to think about the Big Sister in 2 because it just sounded like a weak concept. But that turned out well too. I mean, the fights against the Big Sisters were basically you playing against you from BioShock 1.
See, and that's where I'm going to go with BioShock 2 is that yeah. I don't like most of the game, but I do like the last chapter. Most of the game, I feel overpowered.
Oh, no, all right. Well, here's the thing: there was so much to do in BioShock 2. And
but you're just too strong. Like,
no,
right from
that's
the get-go,
not true either. I mean, if you
that
if
is
you're too strong, play it
true.
But here's the thing:
you're a big daddy.
You have so many options to do. No, you're not quite. You're first gen. The other big daddy. The other big daddies
you're still
were,
a big
were
daddy.
Difficult too in the first game.
You're an even bigger daddy because you can use plasmids.
Well, here's the thing. In the first game, they were easy because you had the Vita chambers.
You know? I still think the second game is mostly easy and mostly like overpowered.
Yeah, I enjoyed playing
and that's why
in BioShock, and not because it was quote unquote easier, but just that. Well, for one thing, it was coded better. You know, it felt smoother. The action was a lot more smooth. You know, the action was on par with Infinite. You know, and Infinite's big thing was that the action was really fast and furious, but in BioShock 2, it was fast and furious too. You know,
but that's what I'm getting at with the second one is that I like the ending to it because it takes that power away from you. And like it literally is like you're playing most of the game as a boss. You are basically a boss character for most of the game. And then it like makes you useless for a second. So you can like finish the rest.
You know, people shit on BioShock 2. I think it was back in 2010 giving it worst game and it's like what a joke. What a joke. Here's the thing. You know, BioShock, like I said, BioShock 2 to me is the best of the series, you know, even more than BioShock 1. Because after, you know, when I play BioShock 1 again, it feels so restrictive in that the story is restrictive. There's only one storyline going on that, you know, and the characters are more memorable in 2, you know.
I
do prefer the ending in BioShock 1 over BioShock 2, though. I mean, I get what BioShock 2 is. Actually, I like it when she saves Lamb Big Sister, if you've been good, you know, she saves her. You know, I think that was really heartwarming. Oh, my favorite moment in Bioshock 2 is when you go to Grace, who raised the Big Sister, who's your daughter. And, you know, and when you don't kill her, she's shocked and amazed. She says, you know, you had me under a gun and you just walk away. No machine does that. A human being does that. And I think that encapsulates the entire game when you spare Grace Holloway's life in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And also, when you become a little sister in Bioshock 2, it's amusing to see what little sisters see. You know,
yes.
Everything is a palace, you know? And, like, depending on what you did in the game, like, if you saved somebody, it shows the Big Daddy holding her. Like, Grace Holloway, it shows her holding her in her hands and carrying her. You know, so you see what they think of you and what they see. And all the splicers are people in top hats and women in gowns.
Yeah. Like I said, there are good parts to both 1 and 2 for me. I really do like the third act of 2. I think it's the best third act of all the series. And even having like been wowed by I went into the whole like would you kindly not knowing what was going to happen, so that actually was a wow moment for me.
I will say I did like Lutece's siblings in Infinite. I thought they were entertaining because for those who don't know, Lutece's siblings are actually one is a woman and the other is her alternate reality male version. So they're not actually siblings; they're actually the same person but different genders. I did not know that until I did a little bit deeper digging into the game's story. I said, oh, okay. So they're actually the same person, just one of them's a male version of the other.
I will say, one of the things I have to give Bioshock Infinite credit for is the DLC.
Oh, yeah. I never actually played through where you go back to Rapture, but I think a lot of the charm is that people say, oh, finally, we're back to Rapture, not that other idiotic place.
There was a lot in the DLC when you go back to Rapture that, like, it was sort of like tying up a lot of loose ends, and it was interesting the perspective you got to see them from. Burial at Sea, that's the one.
Yeah. Here's the thing about Infinite, though. I feel like the game was made backwards in that they had the ending in mind, and they just went from the ending back to the beginning because they wanted to do a twist on the level of Bioshock 1, and I don't think that was necessary. They should have just stuck with the quantum mechanics idea of multiple realities, you know, in which, you know, the reason why you have God Only Knows being sung by a barbershop quartet is because they heard the Beach Boys singing it. And it's funny, as we walk into a room, you can hear Cyndi Lauper singing and Girls Just Want to Have Fun, and you have the paperwork there of the guy ripping off the Girls Want to Have Fun and turning it into a 1910s song, you know.
So let's get back to like the main story though. What do you think of the idea of a new Bioshock under not Ken Levine?
I'm hoping that it doesn't suffer from the M. Night Shyamalan disease that Ken Levine had, and they don't go for a big twist. Just make it a straightforward story. I mean, that's what Bioshock 2 was. When you just really break it down, it was a straightforward story. You had some backstory on how Andrew Ryan, on the Objectivist side, was dealing with Sophia Lamb, who was on the polar opposite of Objectivism, which I won't say communism. I think it's even more than communism. You know, it's almost like Society 1989, in which no one has any values, and the other one, everything is charity. You have to give everything of yourself, whether you want to or not. Where on Andrew Ryan's side, it's everything is selfishness. You get to keep everything. Fuck the other people. So you see both extremes, and that's what Ken Levine said about the first game and the third game, and basically perforce the second game, as it dealt with the same ideas, that it isn't the ideas that are the trouble, it's the extremism. Because when you play Bioshock Infinite, you'd think the rebels are the good guys. No. They're just as bad as Comstock. You know? They don't mind killing a child to get their goals.
Yes. So the first game was libertarianism.
Mind, yeah.
the first game was libertarianism under the
and
sea.
Mind. It was directly,
the third.
It was directly inspired by Ayn Rand because the final boss,
no,
is a character from Atlas Shrugged.
Sure, but like Okay, so let me go with
this.
Yeah,
I know, it's extreme libertarian.
Hold on. The first game was libertarianism under the sea. The third game was nationalism in the sky. I think with the fourth one, you have to do Nazism on the moon.
Yeah, we'll call it Wolfenstein, huh?
We'll call it Iron Sky. It's a movie that's already been made.
I would just like to see... You know what we could do with Bioshock is actually set in the present day.
Yeah, I don't know.
Have extremism here as well as any of those other times now.
I mean, like, yeah, you could definitely make a commentary about where we are now with modern...
I mean, that's what Far Cry 5 did. So Far Cry 5 and New Dawn both did.
I don't know. I'm curious to know, like, what the setting is for this particular game. Like, are they just going to go back to water, or are they going to, like,
well, they did
do
air
just, like,
and
something
sky,
there?
So hopefully the next one will be on the ground. Oh, God, unless it's in the middle of a volcano.
But what if that's – oh, yeah, there we go. I was about to say that'd be boring, but if you put it in a volcano, I'm in.
Earth, Wind, and Fire. Then we could have them actually sing do music for this game.
Oh, my God. do they force the plasmids in, or do you think they leave them out and do something else?
You know, here's the thing about Bioshock Infinite. You know, the elixirs, or what they didn't call them elixirs. They called them something else.
Plasmids.
Yeah, those had nothing to do with the story. They were just there because it was Bioshock. At least the plasmids in 1 and 2 were there, and they were part of the plot. The entire thing revolved around them finding the sea slug on the bottom of the ocean that did Adam. And their society revolved around it, and then they just got too into it, and they basically became big drug users. That's what splicers were, people who used Adam too much.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at, is do you think they try to force it in like they did with the third one, or do
you
think they leave
it
by the wayside?
You have to force it in, though. You have to – here's the thing. If you're going to include something that gives you powers like, you know, like plasmids, at least make it part of the fucking story.
Yeah. I agree. I felt like it was a forced thing in the third one, which was why I was curious if they would do it again.
Scott, you there? You want to continue?
Yeah, I'm here.
We've been dominating this conversation, so. Scott, have you played Bioshock games?
I have not.
Oh, there's a hole in your video game. Well, if you want to try Bioshock, go right ahead. Sorry if we spoiled anything. Just would you kindly play Bioshock?
I would just as easily say go look up the main beats.
No. It's watching a Let's Play video is not the same thing. You gotta have the plot twists right there for you, you know. Even though we've been hinting around what the plot twist of Bioshock is, actually we never really said anything, except for a certain phrase. You know. It still is, you know, here's the thing. If you play Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic and you already know that you're playing Revan, it's still such a wonderful scene when you get to that point in which when your character discovers that they were Revan.
Mm-hmm.
And you have all this stuff, the stuff that was said earlier in the game coming back saying, oh, shit.
Yeah, that was a cool revelation, finding that out. And then you can decide which way you want to go with that, if you want to redeem Revan or go back to being Sith.
Yeah, I'm going to say the dark side ending for that game is one of the most dark of them all. And you have Bastila, and it's kind of obvious they're mimicking Nazis saying, welcome back, the true Lord of the Sith. But I also like the Prodigal Knight ending in which the Yoda guy, it's not Yoda, and, you know, I'm going to say, I said this years ago, but, you know, the other guys of his species must think Yoda's a fucking fruitcake. Because Master Vandar speaks normally. He uses his predicates in the right place, unlike Yoda. I wonder if Yoda's in Dagobah because the members of his species say, get the fuck off our planet, you nutcase.
Well, he's also like 800 years old and probably a little bit geriatric.
Yeah, so what do you think, Vandar isn't? Fuck baby Yoda. That fucking, you know, it's the fucking new Ewok. First you had Ewoks, then you had Porgs, now you have this fucking freak of nature.
Baby Yoda was a bit more natural, though.
What?
Baby Yoda is awesome.
Fuck
off. How can you call him a freak of nature?
You may say that now, but 10 years from now, you're going to hate his ever-living guts. I guarantee it.
You're wrong.
It was the same thing with Ewoks. People love those teddy bears.
That is the most wrong thing you have ever said on this podcast, and you've said some wrong things.
I would bet money on this, actually. Like, that Jonah is wrong.
I'm betting money that I would be right. Let me ask you a question. What do you think of Porgs now?
Well, the Porgs were forced. Baby Yoda has been kind
That's
of
not
like...
forced?
No, but
no.
Pork
Muppet
were barely
babies,
a meme.
Make a dream
Baby Yoda is so unforced that Disney tried to shut down, like, gifts of Baby Yoda to try to cut that shit out.
Jeez. And they have plushies of Baby Yoda, but here's the thing. It's not a plushie if the plastic if the head is plastic.
Yeah, that was creepy. I didn't like the plushie with the plastic face. That doesn't look good.
It's ugly. It's horrible. But
I'm just saying, no. This is so calculated, it's not even funny.
It isn't.
It is so calculated. I have no sentimentality when it comes to movie merchandise. Sorry, I have none. You can't.
Well, that's because you're old and jaded and bitter. Was
brutally murdered.
I know what Paul would be saying right now. That's because you have no soul.
That's what I basically exactly. said. It's because you're old and jaded and bitter. You've been through that.
You can't say it like Paul says it.
Well, I'm saying that you've
been
like,
trying to be Paul.
In a realistic way, you've been through the runner. You've been part of the con before. You've grown old, and you've grown to see through the you've grown to see through the patterns.
Come on.
but you're at the point where like you see Baby Yoda, and you're like, I see what you're fucking trying to do.
No, I would have thought that when I was 13 too.
And I mean,
and it's
yes,
not like I'm,
to
I'm
a certain
anti
degree.
That sort of stuff. I mean. Paul showed off My Little Pony, and I said, oh, yeah, I kind of like that.
And I would say yes to a certain degree, but I would also say no, because so much of the fucking just, like, seeing him all the time is people posting the GIFs basically yeah. attached to every single thing and memeing it into the dirt, which
yeah,
is just, which is just
I mean,
an unfortunate –
give me one word there, minions.
And that's what I'm saying is that it's an unfortunate side effect of where we are in like internet culture right now, where once something does become popular with like select people, they just run it out of control and you just see it all the time. So it does
because it's so fucking stupid that people can't believe it. It's fucking stupid. That's why people are reacting to it. People didn't react the same way to Porgs because Porgs were animals, and they looked like, yeah, that might be a real thing. You know,
but Porgs were an example of what happens when the company does try to force it, I think.
Well, here's the thing about Porgs. Do you know why Porgs are created? Because the island that they shot on was full of puffins. So what they had to do is they had to create Porgs and overlay them over the puffins so that it didn't look like you're on Earth with puffins. So the Porgs were actually had a practical reason of being there. They just made them
sure
as fuck, you know.
Sure, but they also tried to, like, merchandise on that from day one.
Yeah, but, you know, here's the thing. They also depict them getting eaten. So Chewbacca saw them as little chicken legs.
I just think it's different because Yoda was a matter of people seeing that and being like, oh my god, I want that thing. And also Werner Herzog holding the puppet and saying it's his baby, which I just can't even imagine Werner Herzog saying anything to that.
You know what they should have had in Return of the Jedi? Now, the Ewoks were going to eat them. They should have had a corpse of a human near the thing showing that, yeah, they already had someone to eat. And there's his corpse. They already had a butchered animal in the net, so why not have a butchered human so that they seem less cute?
I mean,
they
were getting ready to barbecue Luke,
yeah.
Leia, and Han, so I mean, it's
– I mean, if
–
here's the thing. You know, C-3PO prevented Luke from having to slaughter them all.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's all those stormtrooper helmets just sitting on poles. You know, what do you think happened to all those bodies?
You know – here's the other thing. You know, R2 is the bitchiest he's ever been in any of the movies. First, he zaps Salacious Crumb and just attacks him. Then he attacks the not-wicked Ewok for holding him. He's in a really bad move that entire movie.
Yeah.
He's just zapping everybody.
I do want to ask one thing before we close out this podcast. Jonah, did you know that about the Game Festival thing going on with the Game Awards?
Yeah.
With the demos on Steam?
Yeah.
So have you had a chance to play the BioShock remake demo?
No.
Or not BioShock, System Shock.
No. Oh, no. You see, here's the thing. I back System Shock, so I don't want to play it.
Oh. I would have thought that was going to be the one that you jump on.
I backed it big time, so Here's the thing about me and doing it something like that. I don't want to ruin a narrative story by playing it before it's finished. I'll play Master of Orion, which I bought when it was still in alpha, because it's a strategy game. You know, who cares? But as far as a narrative game, no, I will not play System Shock until it's 1.0.
Hmm. Interesting. They had a bunch of demos on there. I played a Skate Burb, and I still need to play Spirit Fair tonight.
Yeah. Besides, the System Shock demos for people who didn't back it, you know. Say, hey, you know what you could have? Other people have already backed it and basically pre-ordered it. But, yeah. I'm glad. Here's the thing. You know, System Shock is kind of frustrating because they wanted to turn it into a VR game. So then they had to say, no, we can't, and they stopped production. They have to start all over again. It's like they had to restart production, which is why the System Shock 1's not out now, because they decided, let's see what we can do with VR.
Is that what's been taking it so long?
Yeah, they wanted to make it VR. They wanted to make a VR version, and they found it wasn't going to work, so they had to start it all over again. That's why it took so friggin' long.
Well, better that they figured that out and didn't put it out and start it over than tried to force it through and put out a crappy remake of a good game.
My computer's VR ready. I'm not going to get a headset until they're cheap. Our next podcast, we're going to start talking about our personal games of the year, or maybe the next week, because, you know, after that is going to be the holidays, you know, between December 25th and January 2nd, and we may take a break for there. So next week we're going to talk about our favorite games of the year, because it's that time of year again. Actually, you know what? Here's a little bonus thing. Don't tell us the answer to this, but you're also going to have to tell us what your favorite game of the decade is.
Oh, no.
2010 to 2019.
I've been thinking about this for a long time, and I still haven't come up with an answer. I still haven't come up with an answer. There's too many good ones.
Yeah, I know that feeling. There are a lot of good ones.
Yeah, 10 years ago, I actually did the top 50 games of the decade. I might do that again.
That is wildly difficult for me.
Yeah, there's so many good games that came out since 2010. And here's the thing, you know, 2010 is a lot longer than we think it is, because we'll look at the list of 2010 games, oh, shit. That was released in 2011? That was released in 2011? When it seems like they were released like 50 years ago. But no, they were just released in the past 10 years. The other thing is that, you know, the singularity, you know, games have been getting better and faster as the years have gone along. And one thing we have to remember, you know, 2010 to 2013 was the sixth generation of consoles. That is the Xbox 360, PlayStation 2, you know. Those PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360 and Nintendo. Oh, the GameCube, I believe. Yeah, the GameCube. Or was it the Wii? No, it was the Wii. Yeah, the Wii was in that generation.
Uh-huh.
Because the previous generation was the PS2, Xbox, and GameCube. So anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.
Yeah, and you can find me. Oh, you know what? We did that backwards, but that's okay. They already know our Twitter. Bye.